Is that it?
Right. The Committee on Human Services will come to order. What day is this?
March 1st.
March 1st. It's March already. Thank you all for coming today. You will notice that we had previously had some work sessions scheduled. We've rescheduled them all for March 6th because the amendments aren't back yet.
Okay.
So we can't. We're not going to open up a work session. Do we have the sign-in sheets?
Oh, of course.
Okay. Great. Okay, so I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 760. Is there anybody that wants to be heard on Senate Bill 760? No? Then I can tell you all what Senate Bill 760 is. This actually came up in our, if you remember back to the very first week of session, and we had our mandatory child abuse reporting training, and one of the things that the Legislative Council pointed out to us at that point is that for child abuse, every mandatory abuse reporter is a mandatory reporter 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, regardless of how they stumble across the information that leads to concern about child abuse. But for some reason, our elder abuse statute does not match that, and the mandatory reporting requirement for elder abuse only applies if you become concerned about elder abuse in the course of your official duties. So a mandatory reporter would not be required, for instance, to report if they saw their neighbor tying up their elderly mother. They would be a mandatory reporter, but they wouldn't need to report that. So what Senate Bill 760 does is just aligns the elder abuse reporting statute with the child abuse reporting statute, that when you're a mandatory reporter, you don't have to figure out how you came to that information that is of concern to you.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I am not the sharpest stick in the woodpile.
Of course you
but
are.
But when someone writes a summary that says removes requirement for abuse reporting purposes that contact between public or private official and abused person or abuser be while acting in official capacity, what does that mean?
It means that right now, for your mandatory reporting abuse to be, so for you, you're a legislator. You would have to, while being a legislator, you would have to see it at a town hall. You would have had to have somebody call you as their legislator. So this would just say it doesn't matter if you found out when you were at work as a builder or if you were at the Capitol in the normal course of your legislative duties. If you were a dentist, it would mean right now you would be, as a dentist, required to report child abuse no matter where it happened. But for elder abuse, you would only be required to report that if it happened in your dental office. So this removes that. It removes that personal contact requirement in the official duty and just makes it a much simpler. You're a mandatory reporter and you have all the liability coverage, civil and criminal liability protection, regardless of where you became aware of the abuse.
Okay, my only suggestion would be write the summary that someone could understand. I've read the bill and I understood what it did, but if someone just looks at the summary, they go, what the heck does that mean?
Makes it easy for everybody.
Excellent point.
So, Madam Chair, the effect of this is we're always on duty.
Correct, just as you are with children. I think most of us assume that we are. I think most people practice in that way. I don't know, Senator Montes-Anderson, for nurses, for instance, I would imagine most nurses would imagine that if they encountered elder abuse, they would be required to report whether or not they saw them while they were at work.
Yep. So we do.
So, Madam Chair, since I'm elderly, and if he punches me, then you have to report it. Is that correct?
Every week.
Well, I guess I won't be able to punch you as often as I'd like.
That's right.
Well, actually, it already would be required because that would be in my official duty.
There we go.
So.
Oh, we got people coming in now. Okay. Let's begin to do something good.
And then before we close this public hearing, is there anybody that wants to be heard on Senate Bill 760?
I have a question. I'm so sorry I came in a little late. So were people added to 760 that are not on the other?
No.
It's just what's under the current statute.
Correct.
Yes,
correct.
Okay.
Just under the current statute.
Yeah. Okay.
Anything further? Anybody want to speak on 760? Speak in opposition to 760? Going? gone. We're closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 760 and opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 231.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 231 establishes a task force on mental health, or on student mental health support. It directs a task force to investigate mental health issues, including college recruitment, retention, and program completion. It requires a task force to submit a report to the Legislative Assembly by July 1st, 2018. It sunsets task force on December 31st, 2018, and declares emergency and is effective on passage.
All right, let's kick it off with Lena Jamaris and Candlin Johnson.
Good job wrestling with those chairs.
All right.
I'm going to go first.
Okay. All right. So greetings, Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, and members of the committee. I wanted to begin by thanking you, Senator Gelser, for your sponsorship of this bill. It means the world to me, as well as every student that we are here representing today. So thank you for that. My name is Lena DeMarais. I'm a student at Lynn Benton Community College, where I'm also an officer in our Veterans Club. I'm also a type 1 bipolar. Even though I see my condition as an intrinsic part of who I am, it does not come without challenges. I struggle with many aspects of life that my neurotypical peers often take for granted. Some nights I spend wide awake fighting thoughts of self-harm and worthlessness. Some days I can't make it to class because the thought of even leaving my house is terrifying and unbearable. And almost every moment of my life is spent battling crippling anxiety, which is exhausting. Those are the kinds of struggles that often prevent neurodivergent students like me from succeeding in higher education. To better understand what factors in students' lives may be influencing their academic performance, Lynn Benton Community College conducted a survey on its student body in the spring of 2013. Within that survey was a section devoted to assessing the stressors and mental health issues that students were experiencing. They were asked to select issues that have impacted their college performance in the previous 12 months. The results, while shocking to some, are of no surprise to those of us whose existence is marred by struggles with mental health and general well-being. While the entirety of the survey is worthy of attention, there are a few statistics that I think are especially important to share with you now. In contrast with the 1 in 4 statistic we hear around when discussing mental illness, the LBCC survey found that close to half of the surveyed population, around 41%, felt depression so severe that it was difficult to function, and 51% reported experiencing overwhelming anxiety in the previous 12 months. But perhaps the most concerning statistic was the fact that while almost 11% of those surveyed reported seriously, and I want to emphasize that, seriously considering suicide, alarmingly less than 8% of all respondents, not just those 11%, only 8% received mental health services from the college's counseling or health services. I myself have attempted college 4 times now, and I've failed 3 of those times. These past years have been the most successful of my academic career, and the biggest difference now is that I have a support system through my school Center for Accessibility Resources. The tools and skills I have learned through the accommodations provided by these services have allowed me to be more successful academically and professionally than I ever thought possible, something all Oregon students deserve. However, as testimonies here, I'm sure, will attest to, very few students are even aware that these resources exist on campus. The truth is that the existence of these resources is not enough if students aren't aware of them. And without clear-cut parameters on how to best assist students, our resource centers are also struggling. It is my firm belief that the mental health task force being discussed here today is an essential step towards making higher education accessible and equitable for all Oregonians, even those of us who don't fit neatly into the bell curve. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Kimberly.
Hello, Chair Senator Gelser and members of the committee. Thank you for letting me speak here today on...
Kimberly, you can push the microphone back. It's super powerful.
Okay.
If you're
all right,
close.
Sorry.
Oh, so much better. Thank you.
Okay, sorry. So my name's Candlin, and I'm a student at Oregon State University. I'm one of many students who identify as neurodivergent and have been diagnosed with severe ADHD since I was in first grade. I went through school by teaching myself how to develop skills and habits to deal with the fact that my brain works differently than most people. It is one of the things I think that a lot of people can agree on is that the system and education isn't really set up for people whose brain works a little differently. And my sister, however, has not been so lucky. She attends Lynn Benton Community College, where there's a disability center that allows students to sign up for different services, like being able to get a note taker for your classroom, being able to take a test outside the classroom. But it doesn't provide mental health counseling, or even if it does, there's not nearly enough counselors for all of the students who need it, nor do students know that the counselors are there or exist. And so my sister ended up having to seek counseling outside of the college. So part of this is she was told that she couldn't be in a special program in high school because until she failed, and the high school didn't let her fail. So the reason why she went to Lynn Benton Community College is because she wasn't prepared for college, and she thought that she'd be the most successful there. She decided to go to Lynn Benton to try and go to school. She went to tutoring. She started seeking help for her learning disabilities outside of the classroom. And because she can't drive, my father actually ends up having to drive her to everything. My father's actually going back to school at Lynn Benton too, who was just diagnosed with ADHD. I wonder where I got it from. but because he didn't, he's a high school dropout, he didn't develop those skills like I did, so he's also going to counseling outside of school to try and get his education back on the road to help our family. When my grandmother became ill last year, my dad couldn't take my sister to counseling anymore because he was busy driving my grandmother to and from the hospital and to eventually hospice. And my sister and my dad actually ended up both failing their terms, even though they were both going part-time, because they couldn't make counseling. And this was really harmful. My dad also ended up he dropped out of school this term to be able to pay out of pocket for my sister to go back to school because she really wanted to try again. And so this is really an example. I thought to myself, what would have made my sister succeed, right? And I thought if she was at OSU, she could have gotten more counseling because OSU has counseling. But the fact is that she wouldn't have survived academically at OSU. She wasn't ready for that level of academics. And yet she was at Lynn Benton where the academics was more for her, but she still ended up not being able to succeed because of mental health resources for her. When you find out you have a mental health illness or an issue, you don't really you have to develop years and years of coping with that. And the fact is that many college students don't find out that they have a diagnosable mental disorder until they get to college. And it's because of the high amount of stress that students have to deal with that they learn that their brain is different. And I think that mental health issues are a leading impediment to academic success among college students. Untreated mental illness in college student population includes depression, ADHD, anxiety, and eating disorders. And these are all shown to impact and associated with lower GPA and lower retention rates for students, specifically for freshmen. And we see that treatment is effective and available, yet because of an unnecessary shame surrounding these issues, mental health resources are not discussed, nor are they funded properly compared to other student services. And we know that, according to Active Minds, which is a nonprofit organization that seeks to end the stigma on mental health on our college campuses, one in four people on our college campuses nationwide have a diagnosable mental disorder. And then we find that at Oregon State, we did another survey and found that it was 1 in 3. And then another survey was found that it was actually 1 in 2. So you find these different conflicting data, which is why I think we just really need more data, because there's so many different conflicting ideas of exactly how many people aren't getting the services they need, how many people are needing help. I think that students are in a desperate need for mental health, and they're in a desperate need to be able to get access to education because of that. Students who are neurodivergent, students with disabilities, and students who are experiencing mental health difficulties, I think, deserve an equitable chance to be able to go through high school and then go through college. And so that's why I support Senate Bill 231, and I would like you all to help us find a better way to give students the services that they need to thrive. Thank you.
Great. Thank you both so much. Are there any questions for this panel?
None. We don't buy a Senator Bonacenso.
I'm so glad that you came forward to tell your story, because we have had a hard time integrating our mental health neurological disorders that many people have into the whole system of care that is so important to allow you to succeed. So you telling your stories is being very brave, and you're the new generation that is going to help us solve this problem. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for
thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And I did, so the your bill idea, it came out of, do you want to talk a little bit about the process that the Student Association uses every year?
Senator Gelser was actually there during our board retreat, in which the Oregon Student Association has students come up, identify problems, make them into issues that can be action-oriented, and then provide a solution. The one that I chose to do was around mental health of college students. I recognize that we have a desperate need for mental health emergency preparedness on college campuses, specifically with staff and faculty, because faculty is a primary point of contact for students. However, in doing research, I recognize that we lacked data to be able to really understand which programs would be best implemented, as well as, like, you know, justifiable for the fiscal impact. Because of that, I decided, with the help of the Oregon Student Association, that dividing it into two kind of separate ways, so first the task force in order to get the data, and then eventually implementing a mandatory program that would ensure that all staff and faculty have that emergency preparedness.
Thank you very much. Senator Dimbro.
I will say, you know, as a longtime community college teacher myself, you know, I'm certainly aware of, you know, the challenges that students face. And really, students of all ages, to be honest. There are many older students who come back and finding themselves in this very strange world, it triggers things that they had been keeping under control for quite a while. And then others, you know, just students reaching that point in their development where certain things kick in the brain. And as you said, the stress added to the mix just really creates a kind of toxic cocktail. And, you know, I've seen it again and again and again that students have been forced to withdraw from school. And, you know, often after they do so, will recognize, hey, yeah, there seemed to be something odd going on there. And so the degree that, to which we can create sensitivity and awareness on the campus so that there's early detection, but then also resources for where you can refer students in those situations, it's really important. I like the idea of going at this on a statewide basis, because I think there are probably some schools that are have some best practices in different areas, right? And so bringing everyone together and looking at national research for best practices, I think it does really make a lot of sense.
If I may, Lynn Benton Community College has already started implementing mental health first aid, and that was actually the model that I kind of based things off of, and I think that is definitely worth looking into.
Yeah, and I know that OSU has CAPS, and we have really, really great services in some areas when it comes to counseling, but counseling isn't accessible to all the students because there's so many more students than there are counselors. And so, yeah, I agree. I think that there's some services that some universities and community colleges are doing better than others.
Great. Thank you both very much.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, next up we have Samantha Morgan, Ryan Pierce, and Daniel Kelly. And while they're coming up, I don't have anybody else signed up after this panel. Is there anyone that was wanting to speak that hasn't had a chance to sign in? Allison Krauss. Awesome. Welcome.
Hello, Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Senator Olson, and members of the committee. My name is Ryan Pierce. I'm a 21-year-old college student from Eugene. I attend Lane Community College, and I just completed my first year. I'm studying English and Literature, hope to get my PhD at some point in the future. I am diagnosed with acute anxiety, severe depression, high-functioning autism, and PTSD. Through my personal experiences, I have found that when it comes to disabilities, they are not addressed appropriately. When disabilities are addressed, it is generally physical disabilities that are met, not mental ones. Mental disabilities tend to only be addressed when they cause a disruption that is loud enough to attract attention. However, when attention is given to mental disabilities, accommodations are often still lacking what is needed for that individual. Physical disabilities are frequently and easily addressed, as they are visible and tangible. Mental disabilities, however, are not often visible and are much more difficult to accommodate for, though they still deserve equal investment. An individual with a mental disability is still capable of doing all kinds of things. All they need is extra support. When I was finishing high school, Direction Service helped me create a 504 plan that listed what accommodations I needed so that I could have the most out of my education in college. The most important accommodation listed on my 504 plan was I could turn in work late without penalty so long as I communicated with the instructor. When I received a disability plan from Lane Community College through our Center Accessibility Resources, I was only allowed one basic accommodation. The accommodation was that I could receive extra testing time. I was not allowed any other accommodation, so I was turned down from everything else, as I was told it would give me too great of an advantage among other students. My one accommodation that I was given made things harder rather than easier, as I had to plan a week in advance with an instructor to take a test with extended periods of time, and if I wanted to take the test in a quiet room, I had to ask a week in advance before that so that I could have that room reserved for me. The way our system tends to work is that those who have mental disabilities have to prove that they need help by failing over and over again, whether it be on the job or in class, potentially for years until they run out of options. The Disability Center dismissed my needs based on their perception of fairness. They assumed that giving me more time to complete my work would put me ahead of everyone else. It was a matter of leveling the playing field rather than giving me an advantage. Those with mental disabilities, especially those with chronic conditions, have to work much harder to achieve the same level of product as a person without disabilities. Despite what many believe, experiences like mine occur frequently. It is important that our education facilities have the resources available to help those with mental disabilities when necessary. Students with mental disabilities are worth investing into. They are capable of anything and everything anyone who lacks a disability is capable of, and that is why this research bill is needed. Please support Senate Bill 231 and keep students like me in mind. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hello, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. Thank you for letting me speak. I'm Samantha Morgan, and I'm here to talk about the desperate need for research into the current resources for not only people with disabilities, but for those who need mental health help or someone who can provide resources and help for those who are neurodivergent. There is a great deficiency in the services currently available. Please assemble a task force to do the research necessary to find exactly what schools are lacking. I don't just speak as a student who cares, but as a student who faces a lack of resources or understanding needed to remain successful in school, so that I may complete my degree in human services and be able to help serve future communities in Oregon. I am lucky that I can seek my much-required counseling and medications outside of school, but I need more support and understanding. I can receive services for my attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, but I fear my post-traumatic stress disorder and debilitating bipolar 2 will be overlooked. I need more support for my school to remain successful in my education. I know this from last winter term when I lost my medication and counseling services. I only lasted 3 weeks and had to fail the rest of the term. There needs to be equity between people with mental health difficulties, people with disabilities, to people who are neurodivergent. To help these students achieve the success they deserve in their journey through higher education, we need to first research what resources and supports are in place. From here, we can find the deficiencies in our system and find the services that fits Oregon's needs. We need serious discussion on this matter to find the solution we deserve. Students are in need, and you can help them. Will you support this bill and help students who are overlooked daily in their struggles?
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. My name is Daniel Kelly. I am a philosophy student at Lane Community College. For many people, the current state of the world is quite depressing and seemingly hopeless, and school doesn't necessarily seem to help that. So it is no wonder that nearly half of all college students have some sort of psychiatric disorder. Now, these disorders exist in a multitude of different arenas, including but not limited to depression, apathy, anxiety, substance abuse, suicide, transformation anxieties, survivor PTSD, and many, many others. If these disorders are constantly occurring, it doesn't mean that the unfortunate downfalls from them have to as well. This is where Senate Bill 231 comes into play. With the ability to assess at what level or existence behavioral health services on campuses are running at, we could help our students in their most vulnerable and damaging times of need, and therefore avert unnecessary crises from occurring. Here's something that happened to me not too long ago. As Senator Denbro mentioned earlier, I am one of those older folks that have gotten into college very late in my life. I'm also a recovering alcoholic and addict. The hustle and bustle of college really ended up getting to me very quickly. Lack of services, when I needed some help, I had a relapse, which sunk me into a massive depression where I completely withdrew from everybody around me. And that led me to massive paranoid and suicidal thoughts. Finally found out about some counseling services at Lane Community College. When I arrived at the counseling department, in my current state of wanting to kind of throw it all away, surrounded by hundreds of students coming in for their orientations, had to wait for approximately an hour and a half for one of the two counselors for over 4,000 students. By which time I actually got in to talk to the counselor, my personal reserve was able to pull me away from my edge. Now, luckily for myself, I was able to pull myself back from that edge. But not everybody happens to have the same strength as I did, like our fallen schoolmate, Rachel Nice. And to me, that is extremely worrisome. So my question to you here is this: why must people have to struggle and suffer so much before we do something? Why must we wait until tragedy occurs before we accept our ethical duties? I strongly urge you to pass Senate Bill 231 and help us gather the information necessary to help those in need gain control of their lives again.
Thank you so very much. Are there any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you all so much. You all did a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next up we have Allison Krause. Is there anyone else that wants to come on up and add anything to the discussion? Allison, welcome.
Hi. Chair Gelzer, members of committee, my name is Allison Krause, and I'm the Director of State Government Relations for PSU. We are supportive of this concept. We'd ask that the committee consider adding membership of counseling service directors, potentially, maybe from the university and one from a college, just to have that perspective on the task force as well. And let me know if you have any questions.
Any questions for Allison? Nope, seeing none. Thank you. And Lena, could you come back up for a second? So just so we can keep this moving along, would that be an acceptable amendment?
Oh, no, absolutely. I think that the more diverse perspectives we have, the better resources mm-hmm. we can find.
Yeah, and I think that other universities and colleges would be on board to having a voice in how they can work with you all to make sure that services be provided. So,
and then two others that one I'm anticipating and one I've actually heard about. The one I'm anticipating, this bill actually has an emergency clause on it. Would you be amenable to an amendment that took that out and made it effective 91 days after signing day?
Yeah, I think that is actually understandable. I recognize certain issues that come with the emergency clause. So
okay,
yeah, and I would want anything that could keep it from getting the most support as possible to to be removed.
Okay,
if that means it needs to pass. So
that's great. And then the other question that I've heard about this, we've had a couple of folks contact my office asking about whether it should be called the Task Force on Student Mental Health Support or the Task Force on Student Behavioral Health.
I believe that mental health has a more encompassing meaning for the majority of people and think that that would be more appropriate than okay. specifying.
I also prefer that term.
Very good. Any other questions for this group? So, Matt, would you be willing to draft up those amendments? It would be that Allison, could you email to – so Allison will email to you the mm-hmm. the addition to the task force and then removing the emergency clause and replacing it with the 91st.
Yep.
Day. Are there other things that people are thinking of after hearing this that we should have Matt do? No, we'll be okay. All right, so we will work on that and work on getting this scheduled for a work session soon.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you all so much. Really good work. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 231. And as a gift on the first day of March, I'm giving you all back an hour and a half of your lives.
And I'm giving you a banana.
I'm so grateful for this beautiful banana. Thank you, Senator Olson. All right, we are adjourned. We are adjourned. Beautiful banana. Thank you, Senator Olson. All right.